Pope Francis has brought something controversial to the papacy, the prospect of change. In his new book, The Future of the Catholic Church with Pope Francis, Gary Wills, New York Times bestselling author of Why Priests and What Jesus Meant, takes on one of the most pressing questions in modern religion today. What does the future hold for the Catholic Church? Gary Wills is a historian and the author of several New York Times bestsellers. He's also a winner of the Pulitzer Prize and a professor emeritus at Northwestern University. Again, the title of the book is The Future of the Catholic Church with Pope Francis, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Gary Wills back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. Always a pleasure to speak with you.
Glad to be.
We have spoken the last time I spoke to you. We were talking about the early days of Pope Francis's papacy. What do you think the last several months have shown us about his possibilities and the promise?
Well, it has shown us that his model is John the 23rd. He was a pope who brought about change not by monarchical fiat and dictates, but by encouraging the people of God, the whole church, to discuss things with ourselves. He called the council, the bishops and the cardinals meeting there, called in a whole generation of theologians who had been silenced by Pius XII, and they initiated the changes. This pope is acting that way too. He has conducted the synod of bishops. He's appointing committees. He's encouraging people to speak up on various issues. He's told the bishops to survey their people and find out what's on their minds. That's an extraordinary change from the popes that just preceded this one, but it's very like the prospects and the strategies of John the 23rd. It's interesting that he came in second in the conclave that chose Pope Benedict, and he was asked afterward, if you had been elected, what name would you have chosen? And he said, John the 24th, which was a very telling indicator of where his priorities are. But he's had time to think about it this time, and he made a more audacious choice, Francis. Francis of Assisi was not a priest. He was a layman. He was a very subversive figure. He was so radical that his own followers had to tame down his message after his death because they couldn't live up to the poverty that Francis asked people to live by. When my wife and I were in Assisi, we went to the basilica and looked at the glass case where the robe was that he died in. It was a rag. It was all patched. For a pope to aspire to that kind of model is quite extraordinary.
How significant are the firsts here? The first Jesuit pope, the first pope from the Americas?
Well, they're very significant, of course, because it means he's taken a different path toward this office than others have. And one of the things that struck me most at the very outset of his papacy is that he admitted he had been a failure as the provincial of the Jesuits in Argentina. He said, I was put in that office without any pastoral experience. I was young. I was unprepared. And that was crazy. He says the order that chose him and put him in power was crazy in doing it. Then when he became the Archbishop of Buenos Aires, he reversed himself on some of the things that he had done as provincial, which shows that he is humble, that he learns, that he listens, that he does not lord it over other people, including his Jesuit brothers at the outset. And he says that we're shepherds, we people in the hierarchy, and we have to go out to the sheep. We don't expect them to come running into us. We've got to acquire the smell of the sheep, as he puts it. And when he was the Archbishop of Buenos Aires, he praised a priest who was so familiar with the slums that he knew the name of every dog. That's what he wants to be and wants his bishops and other leaders to be.
As a lifetime Catholic, I have never thought of my church or my religion as one of filled with great change. However, You point out in the book, and it's what I love about your writing, is that actually the Catholic Church has often changed.
Yes, it has to in order to survive. I was very impressed as a young person with Gilbert Chesterton's chapter in a book called The Five Deaths of the Faith. He says, the church has often died, and it has often deserved to die. It has been corrupt. It has been hollow. It has lost touch with its own members. But it keeps resurrecting itself. He said, people rightly say that it was too often married to temporal power. But he says, if it was often married, it's often a widow. The times died, and the church didn't. It has continued to... Take, for instance, the attitude toward Jews. The original followers of Jesus knew they were Jews. Jesus was a Jew. Paul said, I am a Jew of Jews. A great scholar, Raymond Brown, says if he had had a son, he would have had him circumcised. And then, after the fall of the temple, animosity and rancor grew up between the synagogues and the basilicas, and the church embarked on a course of anti-Semitism that is really disheartening to read about and to learn about and to know. And it took until the Second Vatican Council for the assembled fathers to say, we did not replace the covenant of the Lord with his people. Paul had begun saying that in the earliest writing of the New Testament. He said, God doesn't change his word. His promises are always going to be fulfilled. We are the heirs of that promise. And finally, after this disheartening long centuries, the church had gone back to its starting point and said, we are all parts of God's plan.
You write about in the book and certainly give examples of serious and deep changes that have taken place in the church within the last century. So with that as a baseline, how ready are we for future change with this pope?
Well, I think we're very ready. I think the fathers of the council were very ready. They knew that there had been some disastrous things done in the preceding papacies. The crackdown on a number of theologians and leaders and people. And John Paul had aged into a debilitating time. And Benedict saw that, and I think that's why he resigned. He didn't want the leadership of the church to be crippled again for a while, as it was in the latter days of John Paul. And I think that the people who gathered respected that choice, as they should. It was an admirable choice for him to resign. That in itself was a change, a new departure. People who met the fathers coming out of the council when they went back said they were happy to say that this they wanted changed. They knew the church had become quagmired in the sex scandal and financial scandals and other problems, the same kind of thing that's happened again and again in our history and from which, as I say, we rose from the dead. I think that's happening now. We're rising from the dead.
So if there is one concern when it comes to this particular pope and his ability to change, it is his age.
Well, you know, that was the same with John the 23rd. He was chosen after a huge, long papacy of Pius the 12th. And some of the people who chose him probably wanted to say, well, it'll take us a while to straighten things out, and he'll just be a caretaker. He'll fill in the time, brief time, and die, and then we can start all over again. And, of course, he didn't live long, but he lived long enough to do amazing things. And I think this pope has the prospect of doing that, too.
The title of the book is The Future of the Catholic Church with Pope Francis by Gary Wills. It is published by Viking. Let us talk about some of the things that he has done in the very short time since he has been pope. What do you think are the major decisions and the major declarations that signal change, and not just temporary change, but even permanent change?
Well, there are a number of them, but one of the most significant, I think, is that there are roughly 1.5 billion Catholics in the world, there are also roughly 1.5 billion Muslims. And as the Archbishop of Buenos Aires, he was very close to the Muslims in Argentina, went to the funeral of the Sheikh. In the first major pronouncement in his papacy, The Joy of the Gospel, he says the Quran is a spiritual classic, and those who follow it have acquired treasures of spirituality that we can learn from. He says there's only one God, and Muhammad was a prophet of God, and the Holy Spirit doesn't speak only through the Pope or the hierarchy of the Catholic Church. God has all of these believers in his care and custody. If this Pope can help prevent a holy war between two of the most populous religions in the world, that will be an immense contribution.
What about when it comes to women? Because for all of the great strides that have come in the past few months for many Catholics, there is still been a hesitancy when it comes to women in the priesthood, and there still comes somewhat of a hesitancy of women in their role in the church.
Yes, there is a terrible record of patriarchy in the church, as in our world, as in America. The pressures for change growing up from below are great, and they are encouraged by this Pope. Again, he's not trying to change by his own fiat or dictate. He's encouraging people. So he's held these synods, first one and a second one to come, telling the bishops to survey their flocks and find out what they need and want. He said, if you're shepherds, you have to have the smell of the sheep. And he's doing that. And the pressures for women entering into leadership roles are recent, even in America, and recent all around the world. But they're very strong in the Catholic Church now because there's a priest shortage. Women are doing a lot of things in my own church. They are the catechists. They are the people preparing people for marriage. And we have to remember that leadership in the church is not only through the priests. There were no priests in the New Testament. Paul does not call himself a priest, doesn't call Peter a priest. When he writes to the various congregations, he doesn't address the leader, the priest, who wasn't there. He says to the Corinthians, you, the holy, the people of God, have done this or that, and tries to counsel them, but knows that the authority is with them. This Pope is repeating the teaching of the Second Vatican Council that the church is not the Pope, the church is not the hierarchy, the church is not the priests, it's the people of God. And women are obviously half of those people.
When you talk about the shortage of priests, I mean, just looking anecdotally, at my own church where we had one parish priest, that priest now serves three parishes.
Oh, yes. Now priests bustle about from place to place doing the sacramental minimum, and they have to rely on others to hold the community together. Lay control over the finances of the church is advancing. That was one of the side effects of the sexual scandal. The laity started asking, what are these sums of money being paid to plaintiffs, coming millions and millions of dollars being paid to people, and the source of all that was covered up at the outset, and more and more Catholics were demanding to take control of the finances.
So is it too easy to simply say that we should look at women priests and we should look at the possibility of priests and marriage?
Well, remember how recent it is that women had leadership roles in our society. I was at a bar meeting, the lawyers' bar meeting, in the 1990s, and the woman conducting the meeting said at a women's caucus lunch, all of you who were the first woman to be the editor of your law school review stand, all of you who were the first to be a district attorney in your district, all of you who were the first to make senior partner in your law firm, all of you who were the first to be a judge, all of you who are the first to be a university president, all these women firsts, they were hundreds and hundreds are standing by the end. It had all happened in their lifetime. So long abuses of authority can change very rapidly when there is a democratic age. Remember, the Pope is a fading monarch. He was a real monarch with armies and realms and troops and spies and torturers for many centuries. That began to change only in the 19th century, but it is responding to the democratic pressures. We've outlived the age of the monarchs, and that's again the story of the church breathing in and breathing out by a process of making change and reversing change and having to come up with new changes. That's the history of our church.
So with that said, does the doctrine of the church allow and promote in some way those changes of marriage and women entering the priesthood?
Well, the idea that the church is defined by doctrine is something that this Pope does not believe. He thinks it's defined by the Scripture, that he says, let the Scripture tell us. Women were very important in the church. You know, he washed the feet of women on Holy Thursday, and people said, oh, that's terrible. There were only 12 male apostles at the Last Supper, and he washed their feet, so women's feet can't be washed. Well, we don't know that there were no women at the Last Supper. It's extremely unlikely. Women were everywhere in Jesus' following. In fact, they were the ones who stood at the foot of the cross when the men had fled away. Mm. The first woman to see that Jesus had risen was Mary Magdalene, and she ran and told Peter and others. So whether doctrine has the place for women is beyond the point. We have to live as Jesus did, and there are all kinds of things that came later. We'll have to try to get back to his time.
So even in the short time that Francis has been Pope, there certainly has been opposition and controversy within the hierarchy of the church. So in the time that he has to make change, do you think enough will be revealed and enough will be able to happen to see that future popes will continue those changes?
Well, I don't want him to make all the changes from the top, as if he were a monarch. What he is doing is the same that John the 23rd did, encourage us to speak up our needs, our demands. We live in a different world from the medieval papacy.
But there could come someone who is not as open to that bottom-up approach.
Well, of course, that did happen with the popes after John the 23rd, but the major changes made in the Second Vatican Council, the whole change on the attitude toward the Jews, for instance, the whole change in the monopoly of Latin. You know, most people think that what the Second Vatican Council did was change the Latin of the Mass. It changed the whole emphasis on Latin as the only thing that priests could be trained in, the only thing, only Bible you could read. That had all built up a kind of monopoly of people who were in on the secret, and the rest had to be excluded. So Pius XII and others had said, we can't read the original Bible, Hebrew, Greek. The Latin is what we should read. It was a translation done 4th and 5th centuries by various people. Getting back to the Greek was an amazingly important step. Catholic scholarship had been stultified for years, and it burst into a whole new generation of learning. So you may have taken two steps forward and fallen one step back, but we shouldn't think that the Second Vatican Council was canceled afterward. And I don't think that whatever Pope Francis accomplishes will be canceled either.
I think it's safe to say that this is an optimistic book.
I'm very optimistic, yes. I think this Pope is a man of real surprises and promise. He's a kind of spiritual phenomenon.
And ultimately, what do you hope people take away from reading your book about this future?
Hope. I think we should have hope and take us where the hope leads. We should not expect to sit back and let Francis do everything. He's telling us to step up and be the harbingers and the effectors of change.
Gary Wills, it's always a great pleasure to speak with you, and always a great pleasure to read your writing as well. The Future of the Catholic Church with Pope Francis is the new book. It is published by Viking. Always a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you very much.
Pleasure is mine.
Thank you very much. Again, Gary Wills is the author of the new book, The Future of the Catholic Church with Pope Francis. It is published by Viking. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.